Hello, I'm Mariette Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to live a happier and healthier life. Thanks for tuning into Calm, Clear and Helpful, the weekly podcast series which introduces you to wellness professionals offering their expertise and assistance. Today's topic is value your time, set boundaries and say no without guilt. Do you often find yourself wishing that you had more time? One of the biggest challenges we face is protecting our time from constant demands and interruptions. If you, like me, simply being told to set boundaries and say no, especially without guilt, isn't helpful because I don't know how to do it. Today I'm talking to a man who has studied our complex relationship with time and come up with a personal development guide that challenges conventional productivity culture and offers a framework for taking back ownership of one's time. Let me introduce Michael Glenister, business consultant, serial entrepreneur, podcaster, and author speaking from Southern Europe. Welcome, Michael.
Good morning, Mariette. It's great to be here.
Firstly, tell us about your professional management consultancy, J2H, which you run with your wife and business partner, Danita.
So J2H, or The Journey to Here, is a small boutique consultancy, and we help small to medium-sized businesses find value in their businesses, and then we help them to realize that value. In a nutshell, that's what we do. So we hold their hands through a process of evaluating their business as if it were a person and looking at its strengths, its weaknesses, where it has missed opportunities. And one of the things we've found is that every business has opportunity to grow, including our own. We get in every now and again an external consultant to look at our business as an outsider and say, right, what are we doing wrong? What are we missing? Where can we grow? And I know that The Journey to Here reflects our philosophy of being lifelong learners, and we encourage the people and the businesses we deal with to be lifelong learners. And that kind of gives us a little segue into the book, but I'm going to leave the flow of the conversation to you.
Oh, we're going to talk a lot about that book, which has already made a big impression on me. Now, in our pre-talk, you said that there's a good reason for naming your business The Journey to Here, and I'm curious.
Mariette, it has been quite a journey. Danita and I met a little less than 20 years ago, and we could never have imagined that we would be sitting now almost 20 years later running a management consultancy from rural Southern Europe, dealing with clients mainly based in South Africa, and dealing with them in many ways as if we were there. And technology is an incredible thing. We live in a world that has many disruptive factors that we are facing. We're facing significant uncertainty. But in that, the single most certain thing in our lives is change. And that change over the last 20 years, last two decades, has moved us from living in South Africa, in suburban South Africa, running a very traditional type business. Danita at that stage was at some stages part of our business there, which was really focused on the commercial photography game. and allied industries. She spent a lot of time in education, both at school level and at university level teaching. And we're now sitting where we have a life that is outside of the hustle and bustle, having lived in the desert for 5 years. So our journey is a multifaceted path, and it is for each one of us. Each of us have a story to tell. And there's a saying that says something like, it is so sad when people hear the music inside their head, but they die without ever having danced. It's something to that effect. It's some other author said it. And we decide daily to consciously live our lives and enjoy our journey, whether it be living here as we do in rural Southern Europe, whether it be being in downtown London, or whether downtown Dubai, Johannesburg, Sandton, Turkey. When we started traveling in 2015, we really started traveling deliberately, and we visited strange places, Nepal, Armenia. Obviously, we had to see the African continent, Zanzibar and Tanzania. And we traveled a lot to places that many people don't get to see. We went not as tourists, but as part-time inhabitants of the places. So when we say the journey to here, we sat probably sometime in 2019, and Danita and I were looking at some of the photographs we'd taken of the various places we've been. And we said, you know what, we have a story to tell. We need to tell it, because we have journeyed to so many different places. And we have a unique way of seeing things. And so does Mariette Snyman. And so does each of her guests. Each of us have a new and unique story. And we felt that it was really sad that few of us get to tell it. The journey to here was born out of a desire to tell our story, and it has evolved, and it's become more than just a storytelling. It's become more than the podcast. It's become more than the daily interaction with people. It's become a story that we hope will inspire other people to live their lives. And as Keating says in the movie Dead Poets Society, Keating's character is played by Robin Williams. He says that there were people that were dedicated to sucking the marrow out of the bones of life. And that's what we believe is possible. Life should be and can be fulfilling. And most people do lead lives of quiet desperation. Another line from the movie. So the journey to here is our exploration of the story that lives inside us and lives inside of anyone and everyone. And we get to share it with both our clients and our audience. And we'd love to hear other stories as well, because everyone has a journey to here.
Yes, you have touched on so many themes now. But the only thing I'm going to say is that if how you live and the way you approach life excites others, as it does me, then your book that we're going to talk about today is a signpost to things you do, like living life with great intentionality and how to focus on what would really bring you joy. So, I've just finished reading your book called Take Back Time, A Guide to Rethinking Your Relationship with Time. How did this book come about, Michael?
Mariette, the book was started as a book in its own right, probably about June, July last year. And as part of our business, we are involved in coaching clients, mainly business-related coaching. So we coach people on strategy and management, leadership. We do statistical analyses, and there's a lot that goes into that. But one of the common themes that we found dealing particularly with executives of all levels, both mid-level and top level, the so-called C-suite, the COO, CFO, and CEOs, was particularly in small and medium enterprises. There is a tendency for people to say, oh, I don't have time for this. So we would say, for example, you need to go and read this book by so-and-so. One of the recommended books that I always have is The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker. And they would say, well, I don't have time to read. And I would say, well, there's your problem. That is the start of the problem. And through the conversations where we actually trained people to take back time, literally, from time thieves and time wasters, I said to Danita, this needs to be put in writing, because as much as we are working with these clients, there's a whole audience out here that need to hear the message, because there are plenty of books on time management, which are really revolve around productivity and efficiency. And it's how to organize your tasks in such a way as to complete them. And they talk about priorities. And priority as a word never meant multiple. It was supposed to be priority. You can only have one priority. It's the origins means one thing. And we put things in order, and we now have 10 most important things that we do. So we just feed more into the machine of our lives in terms of productivity. And we said, there's the problem. People believe that they have to do everything. One of the questions that I often ask, particularly senior executives that I deal with, are, do you believe that your ability to create wealth is directly related to the amount of time you have and the amount of time you spend? And if the answer is yes, you haven't arrived yet at realizing your value. There's a saying that says the millionaire and the beggar have exactly the same amount of hours allocated to them. It's what they decide to do with those hours that determine the outcomes of their lives. I was recently listening to a very short talk on Anton Rupert, actually a guest on my podcast. He reflected on Anton Rupert, the Remgro Group, founder of Remgro. He started his business in cigarettes, in tobacco, which is a subject we were not going to discuss the merits or demerits or morality or lack thereof. But he started selling loose cigarettes. That was how he started his business. And from selling loose cigarettes, buying a pack, selling them loose, eventually built up an asset base. And that asset base became what is Remgro. But what he had to start with was not money, was not capital in terms of money. He had intellectual capital and he had time. So what Take Back Time does is it says, realize the value of that time capital that you have. We all have it. Some of us have less. Mariette, you and I are not 20. Realistically, we don't have as much time capital on our hands as the 20-year-old. But you know what? Because our time capital has been gathered and deployed over the decades of our lives, both personal, business, combination of the two, it is now an asset if we have done our job and been good custodians of the time. We have built up knowledge, intellectual capital. We have built up hopefully some financial assets as well. But financial assets come and go like the wind. You lose them. One of the things that business people understand, particularly entrepreneurs, is financial capital is actually the easiest thing to get back. If you lose your financial capital, it is the simplest capital to get back once you've deployed your other resources. And that's one of the things that, unfortunately, we have been conditioned that money is scarce. It's actually the least valuable asset out there. It's a depreciating currency. It's not even an asset. But coming back to time, Take Back Time was written to help people to realize that as a human being, your value is measured in time. Your value is not measured purely in financial output or financial gain, because there are times that we go through, and I went through a stage in 2015, we sold a business that we had, and I decided to take a one-year sabbatical. Eventually, that one-year sabbatical became 5 years, because I then started researching, and I started writing a book. And when I started researching what I needed to know to write this book, it took me into the world of geopolitics and economics at a higher level, which I'd studied as a youngster but never really understood. And I invested massive amounts of time, 5 years of it, in gaining knowledge that was added to my previous knowledge base. And what happened was, by deploying that in a burst from 2020 onwards, you're all of a sudden able to regain the financial cost of that time break, because you're able to leverage the capital. And we're getting very conceptual here, Mariette. And this is I'm hoping that if people read the book, they will start to understand it. And I think that when one reads this the first time, you'll get some tips and tricks out of it. When you reread it a second and a third time, I'm hoping that it will, like it has done for some readers, enable you to rethink and reimagine not only your relationship with time, but your relationship with life itself. Because very often we raise our own obstacles. And you'll see right in the beginning of the book, I speak about cognitive dissonance, because when we're confronted with new information, there is a tendency, and it's born into each of us, it's a survival mechanism, but there's a tendency to say, oh no, that can't be right, because it questions the very foundations upon which my life is built. I cannot accept it. I have to reject it. That's a survival mechanism built in through the evolution of man, whether you want to go through creationist theory or evolutionary theory, it is built into us. We have to question our own assumptions in order to grow. Now, I was having a conversation with a person that I've been mentoring this morning, and we've walked a path for the last year almost. And he said, you know, the thing that I learned to do was question my own assumptions. And a good coach, which I hope I am, said to him, you know what? I have had to as well. And you know that little saying I like to put out there, we all have the responsibility to learn, the ability to teach. The ability to teach and the responsibility to learn. You can say it either way. That's what Take Back Time is about. It is about starting back at ground zero, questioning where you are, who you are, and your relationship with the most valuable asset in the world, your time. Through my life, I've got to say goodbye to a number of people. Unfortunately, as one gets older, you do. And you realize when people get older, in the last years and months before they pass away, they don't regret what they've done nearly as much as what they haven't done. We regret nothing. And we can truly say that the book, and I'm speaking for Danita and myself, the book, where it is a reflection of our lives where they are. And when someone looks at the life we live, they say, oh, that's idyllic. I would love that. And then I hold up the cost sheet and I say, this is what it's going to cost you to do this. Your friends are not necessarily able to speak the same language as you. So you're conversing in a third language. You cannot pick up your phone and order Checkers 6060. You can't have pizza delivered. These are the things you can't have, but these are the things you can, because you can have anything, but you can't have everything. Take Back Time is designed to make you say, what is important? What adds value to me? What doesn't? Cut the things out that don't add value and do more of the things that do add value. Does that answer the question?
Yes. And once again, you've touched on many subjects. This is why it's not just a book with tips and tricks, but a personal development guide. For me, who has gone through it the first time, it was interesting to note that it has a practical framework. So it offers one many practical things to do and questionnaires, a few of them, and so on. But basically, it is, as you said at some stage, in a pre-talk, I think, it is a philosophical framework. Because, as you say, it addresses things that we take, well, we live with. Some things we take for granted, some things that may not serve us, but we live with. And I think at this stage, I'll just say that for me, the greatest takeaway from your book, and we'll get to that when we speak, is that you cannot value your time if you cannot value yourself.
Absolutely. Mariette, that is the essence of everything, and you are spot on. We unfortunately have been conditioned into valuing almost anyone and anything else more than ourselves, valuing someone else's opinion, valuing someone else's time, valuing someone else's beliefs. And there is absolutely a place for mutual respect. We live a life based on value for value, which is an Ayn Rand ideology. But you cannot look after and serve and be of value to someone else if you're not strong yourself. There's a reason why if you're on an aeroplane and the safety announcements, they give them right at the beginning and everyone falls asleep. If you're a frequent flyer like we are, you sort of zone out. It's just interesting if someone has a humorous take on delivering the safety instructions. But it's the saying goes, or the line goes, if there's a sudden decrease in cabin pressure, oxygen masks will be deployed automatically from the panel above your head. And then the next line says, please ensure that your mask is properly fitted before assisting others. There's a reason for that. If you're dead, you're of little use to anyone else. And if you are worn out, you're certainly of very little use to anyone else. And this coming from myself, who as a 26-year-old burnt out. I hit burnout at 26. I was an incredibly ambitious, high-energy youngster that had constant fights with my MD at the time because I was working too hard, and he would tell me to take a break. And there were fights about that because he believed in balance, and he was a very wise man, and he's built a really good empire for himself, and he taught me many of the early lessons, but I didn't listen because we don't like to listen when we're 20-odd years old. And we've been taught to value ourselves largely in terms of our material accomplishments. And one of the sad things that we see, particularly in South Africa and developed nations, is how that desire results in massive debt, financial debt in many cases. And it's something that we watch, and we just, having now lived debt-free for quite some time, look back at those days and we say, we were there because we were told that you had to subscribe and aspire to a certain lifestyle that cost a certain amount to maintain. So yes, Mariette, we have been unfortunately conditioned to value ourselves less than the other person. And for whatever reason it is, whether it's societal, whether it's religious, it is something we see across the board. But eventually what happens is when you continually devalue your own time and devalue yourself, you run out of energy completely, to the point where you are no longer of value to society. One needs to maintain the balance. And selfishness is not self-centeredness. It's a big difference. If one is self-centered, you only care about yourself. If you are selfish, you look after yourself and are then able to feed others as well. We have another saying in our little community, and that is, it's not our saying, it's just come through. Generosity comes from a place of abundance. You cannot give what you don't have. And included in that is time. But yes, that self-love, self-value is vitally important. And you had another guest on your show a while ago. It's in fact how our paths crossed, Dr. Albert Bramante. And his book, Rise Above the Script, is an excellent book. Thoroughly enjoyed reading that as well. And he speaks about us having to be kind and compassionate with ourselves. Because if we look and listen to our friends, they are generally way more compassionate with us than we are with ourselves. And we need to actually learn to see the good as well as that we want to improve on. But yes, you're quite correct. A recurring theme throughout the book is the act of valuing yourself and attaching a value to yourself by which you measure your interactions. So when we get to the chapter that says fire the time wasters, and this is after one has done a time audit, you go through that and you get rid of activities or people that are wasting time. And very often in business, it involves firing a client. And people say, oh, no, you can't fire clients. You have to fire clients because if they don't add value to your business, they are damaging your business. Get rid of them. In life, a very obvious thing to fire is any social media engagement that does not actually have real value. That senseless scrolling through the updates and scrolling through the feeds in the hope of getting a dopamine hit. to something that you like to see, and then there's an equal risk of you getting exactly the opposite, and you get a cortisol spike because you see something that gets you angry. Mm. Don't do it. Don't do the senseless thing. If you're going to engage with something, do it consciously, because to do it unconsciously says that activity is more valuable than me. And it's not. We are beautiful people. We, each of us, has the ability to be beautiful and to be smart and to be educated and to have value and give value. But only if we look after ourselves. If we don't look after our bodies, we don't exercise, we don't eat the right food, the only person that's going to be happy is the doctor and the medical system. But not our family, not us, not our friends, because we're going to be the lethargic person that always needs help and picking up. Valuable interaction starts with valuing ourselves. Then we add value to others.
Yes, I'd like to go back to what you mentioned, the time audit, because to me, the whole question of valuing ourselves is extremely important. I have thought for a long time that if I could have one wish for the world, it would be that people would see their inherent value to a greater extent, not because of what they do or what others think they do, but because of what they are. And that's a whole topic for another day. But maybe there are listeners who are like me, who struggle to see their self-worth. I think that is something that is not uncommon. And now I started doing your time audit only yesterday. We are recording on a Tuesday. I started on the Monday after I had read your book. And maybe before I tell you what my reaction has been so far, you'd like to give us a short summary of what the time audit entails.
So the time audit is not a new idea. It is something that is taught in many business schools. It is taught in many self-help books. So it fits into my book contextually and part of the philosophy. Peter Drucker once said, you cannot manage what you can't measure. And if you don't measure your time, you can't manage it. Now, I do like to take things a step further and say you shouldn't just manage your time, you should direct it and control it. Because you'll see in the book as well, you would have noticed I speak about the difference between investing time, spending time, and wasting time. But when one gets to the time audit, one needs to do it a few times. And you're on round one. Because even that time audit, when you fill that in the first time, you will be filling it in with the belief system that says, I answer emails at 8 o'clock, da, 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 and I, from 8:15 to 8:30, I did this today. And you need to fill this in real time as well, by the way. I don't know whether that comes across clearly enough in the book, but you need to do this time audit, not retrospectively. You need to do it as you're doing it, because what happens is by the end of a day, you don't really remember everything you did. You don't remember the time wasters, particularly. You don't remember that person that stuck their head around the door of your office and said, can you just tell me this? And that also comes into interruptions, controlling interruptions later on. Once you have a complete picture of what happens in a day or a long period, and I've suggested at least a week, 2 weeks on the time audit, go longer if you can, because there are certain activities that have longer timescales. You're in media, and as a journalist, you have your daily, you have your weekly, and you have your monthly deadlines, and they will slot in and affect your workflow throughout the month. And the crises will start crunching up the 3 to 4 days before the deadline, and your day as much as you thought you controlled your day, editorial privilege takes over the 3 days before the deadline.
True.
You know this happens. So once you've started with that time audit, you then analyze and go through each activity. And as I've said in the book, you then need to say, what value does each activity bring to me? One of the things that we also like to do is to consolidate activities that are similar. So in other words, if we are looking at our time audit and we see we've replied to emails at 8 o'clock in the morning and then again at 10 and then again at 1, one needs to ask oneself the question, was this really necessary? Or can all of those mails be pushed into maybe the morning mails be pushed into a 10 o'clock slot, depending on the line of work you're in, and the afternoon mails be put into an afternoon slot? And very often people will say, oh, no, but I have to be available. No, you don't. You really don't. People believe that whilst they are busy undervaluing themselves by giving their time away to whoever asks for it, they believe that that proves their value. It doesn't. It just makes you less effective. So with that time audit, you have an idea of the flow of your energy through a day. You'll see that there's also a space, and it's further on as you get through the book, where it tells you to look at your energy levels after completing an activity. I don't know, are you there yet?
Oh, yes, that is actually what I wanted to talk about, but you must first complete what you were going to say.
Okay. So with that time audit, the first is just a capturing of what you do, what really happens in your day. Know exactly what happens. Know how many times you are disturbed, disrupted. And then you're going to look at your energy levels for each activity as well. But once you have done that analysis, the complete analysis, then you need to step back and look at that activity and say, right, what needs changing and how can we do things better? So I'm going to give you a little example, short example. Yesterday, living in a little village as we do, our house is not on the map. Well, on the edge of a little village. So we had two deliveries from outside service providers at different times yesterday. So we get a phone call from the courier company that says, we can't find your house. Can you meet us in the center? Now, the center is probably about a kilometer and a half down the road. So it's I can take a short walk. But add those two interruptions to all the other things we during the day. And unless I am function stacking that, in other words, killing two birds with one stone and getting some exercise, or it's highly inconvenient and disruptive to my day. So we decided we're going to create a new little system for ourselves. And in this case, we are going to print a little map to get to our house and leave it at the municipal building. It'll be laminated. The driver picks it up there and gives it back to us here, and we'll give it back to the mayor when we see her. And when we spoke to the mayor says, oh, no, but everyone just comes to the center. And I said, but we're not everyone. The fact that there is not a system in place, if we leave it that way, then that's on us. But there is a new system that can be put in that will resolve the continual problem. And we also say in our consultancy, if there's a fire that breaks out more than once in an area of the business, a figurative fire, there's a problem that comes out more than once, you have a system failure. You didn't have a fire. You actually had a system failure. The fire was just the symptom. And we often hear people say, oh, I spent the day putting out fires. Then you need to sit back and do a time audit and say, how much time did I spend putting out fires? How many of these fires could have been prevented by just putting a fire extinguisher in there or taking away the combustible material. Obviously, I'm speaking figuratively here, but for us to leave a time waster in place, in this case, with us living on the edge of the village, we either need to say the exercise is good for us, we're going to do it, or we need to put in a system to catch that. The time audit does exactly that. Look particularly for the disruptions in your daily pattern. Look for the things that weren't planned. That thing that says, I had to sort out a delivery that didn't happen according to plan. I had to respond to the third request from Johnny, who was asking where his stationery is that should have been delivered 3 weeks ago. Whatever the case may be, those are indications of system problems. And it was interesting. I was working on the Afrikaans translation of the book, which we'll talk about a little bit later because that's exciting. I was working on that last night. And the time wasters, I had a couple of options for time waster. And the one that I've chosen is tijdvreter. How nice is that? Because there are these little time munchers. Maybe I must change the English version as well to time munchers. There are these time eaters or time munchers that creep in. That's what that audit is there to do. That audit there is to identify those little declinacies, the things that come up that need to be dealt with before they start big fires. Because the little fires you leave today are going to be the big fires that you sort out tomorrow. So that's the methodology behind the audit. The big thing with the audit is be honest, be truthful. No one else is looking at this. No one else is marking it. You can go and download the form on our website as well. We've made it available so you can print as many copies as you like for yourself and go and fill it in and do it every now and again. The time audit is the basis for everything. Know thy time. Know where it's going. Once you know where it's going, you know how much you can take back. And this is a little message to the junior people in businesses. The book, I think one of the questions Danita and I chatted about when we were getting ready for our interview with you was, what is the target audience? And I said to Danita, the target audience is everyone that can read. And those that can't should learn. Those that are now on the TikTok 30, 60 seconds, whatever TikTok does, learn to read, expand your attention span. Because this is written for the young person that is just starting out. Do the time audit. Start there. When you are I trained an internal sales lady as part of a project we were doing a little over a year ago. Young lady, was her first job, first real job. She'd worked part-time in retail stores on weekends. And I sat with her and all of a sudden there was a problem in the business. Her director had to go on long leave and she was it. She had to basically run the sales department internally. And I said to her, control your desk. The first thing you're going to do is you're going to do a time audit. You're going to record everything that goes on. Every time you open that gate, every time you respond to the telephone, every time you get a customer complaint, every time you get a customer that says you guys are doing well, everything, you record it. And then look at what value it adds to the business. The other thing that I teach young people is control your desk. No piece of paper arrives on your desk without you knowing about it and knowing what to do with it. No instruction comes over your desk without you controlling it. Because if you control it coming in, you are responsible for it going out. You cannot be responsible for it going out if you did not allow it in. That's the power of the time audit. Where did the tasks come from? Do they add value? When did they happen? How many are duplicated? How many can be consolidated? And with this young lady, I still remember the first week we worked together, she said, but I can't do this. I can't do this. I said, you will. Control your desk. Start with controlling your desk. You can't control everything that happens, but that desk, that's under your control. It's a meter away from your arm, from you, each way you stretch. First Monday, she said, you know what? I'm able to take my lunch breaks again. And you know what? I don't work late. I don't work late anymore. And at the same time, the sales were climbing because there are so many things that we do that add no value. And when we trim that fat and get rid of them, we start getting value. She got value in time back for herself. She went on lunch, which was time that was stolen from her. And she went home on time, which was time that she allocated to her family. And at the same time, the business flourished. If you do it right and you use that time audit as your analytical tool to tell you where to focus and what to focus on, that alone can change a large part of your life. That is the practical analysis of the philosophy that you've read up until you get to that chapter.
Yes, and that is, in fact, the type of outcome I expected when I started doing the time audit. But prompted by your book, there was more than that, because you suggest that one does the time audit every half an hour. I must say I manage at least to check in real time every hour. And what I found that really was so interesting, that when I also looked at what I was doing in terms of energy, which you explain in the book, and in terms of value, I actually made some discoveries about things that bring me joy. You know, I always go, for instance, onto LinkedIn, which is the platform where I get the most business, and then it feels like a chore. And then yesterday, I had two interactions on LinkedIn that I discovered I enjoyed immensely. One was a comment someone put on one of my posts, and another one was a comment I put on someone else's post. So I must say that, number one, I discovered more things that bring me joy through the time audit. The other thing is that I actually, because I'm now tracking when I'm working and then I'm tracking when I'm feeling exhausted and need a rest, I say to myself, you have earned that rest because you have done A, B, and C. And I never noticed that before. You know, I just thought I should be able to go on forever. But now suddenly I'm seeing the value of what I'm doing.
Mariette, and I'm glad that that value has come there as well. But one of the things you've just noted there is the need for pause, the need to take a rest. And you'll see one of the final chapters in the book, I speak about cadence. And we all have our own cadence. Each person has a different requirement in terms of cadence. My energy levels are highest early morning, and then after about 7 o'clock in the evening, middle of the day, I'm not the most productive. So for me, if I'm going to do deep thought work, it's best to do it either early morning, which doesn't happen. It doesn't really suit our routine. So then I do it late evening. During the day, I will do manual labor, work in the garden, work on the house upstairs. And those are the rest with your hands moments, as we call them. We believe in resting with our hands. So one of the reasons for having that little metric as well is tied to activity. What does my energy level feel like after doing this activity? Remember that time of day can also affect that. I read a management book when I was in my probably late 20s. And the guy said all senior executives should have a nap at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Just an arbitrary time. So I thought, well, that doesn't work for me. But I started taking mine at about one. So in my late 20s, early 30s, I started taking a nap. and it would be a 20-minute nap. And my PA at the time would really laugh about it. My colleagues would laugh about it. But I'd go and lie down flat under my desk for 20 minutes and have a nap. And get up energized, because we have again learned to live in a very structured and organized way according to the requirements of the industries that we have been groomed for with our education system. Those industries are changing completely. We have many discussions, Danita and myself, now, and saying, we are just so glad we started learning more about AI when we did, because as people who are not 20 years old, AI, we know its origins. We know where it comes from. We know where it leads, where it can lead, but we also understand that it's a tool to be used and leveraged. But we also know that the old way of working a 9-to-5 is disappearing drastically. It's disappearing fast. And yet, we do not honor that fact in our life design. And when you are tired, rest. Rest when you are tired. Work when you have high energy levels. I was listening to a podcast that I follow on economics and the financial markets a couple of weeks ago. He told the story of how he started his business. And in 2019, he was a stockbroker and he wanted to start his own life and redesign his life around his work requirements and life requirements, life design requirements. So he went to his boss and he said, look, I'd like to work from home and these are the hours I would like to work and we'll keep all my targets exactly the same, but I can achieve it doing this amount of work from home. And the boss said, under no circumstances, company policy prohibits it. That was late in 2019. Well, in 2020, we know what happened. And he said he had already left, resigned, started his own thing. But the entire company started working from home and doing exactly what he had asked to do. So why can't everyone do that? Why can't everyone do that? And one of the things is people are too scared to try, too scared to ask. On a conversation with a friend of mine recently, and his wife works for a business, and there were certain things that weren't working for her. So I said, well, just get her to see if they'll change her contract. And the immediate response is, oh, no, it's a contract. You know, we accepted, we signed. Everything is a negotiation. And she was able to negotiate what she needed. And I think where I'm heading, and I know I've gone on a bit of a tangent here, but Mariette, this comes back to that audit, the energy levels, design your life backwards. Look at the life you want and then what you need to do to achieve it. And where your current life and lifestyle can be tweaked to fit in with your dream picture, do that. It's actually very seldom that one has to completely start again. I've done it. We've done it. We've started again. My first business failed. 21, that one didn't get off the ground. That was when I started my first business. And I didn't sell a single product. I made them, couldn't sell them, didn't know how to sell. So I had to learn how to sell. So that was first learning curve. So I started working in an industry at half my previous salary of the banking industry I'd left just to learn to sell. Then I started another business that did quite well after working for bosses. I had shares in three businesses before that. Let's not get too sidetracked. I failed in another business, age 31, 32. That was a disaster. I had to start again and started another business in 2005, Matt did reasonably well. Sometimes we get to pivot and just change direction. And sometimes we have to start again. As long as one realizes that the foundation for everything is time, not money, you can design according to that life audit that you do, where I am, the dream, have a dream where I want to be, set the path between the two, and know that you're going to make mistakes, and most mistakes can be recovered from. Unless you die, then that's kind of difficult. We haven't worked that out yet.
Yeah, Michael, I still have a question for you. You refer to everything that is negotiable. Would you like to just, in a nutshell, maybe speak about two things? The first one is setting boundaries, and the second one is saying no without guilt.
Okay, the second question is a really complex one. And I say complex because it varies from person to person. So let's deal with the first one, the setting boundaries. And the setting boundaries basically starts with, and we're talking in the confines of the time discussion here, what is important to you? And one of the first things that I do with working with clients, particularly personal clients, is I say, what is the most important thing to you in your life? And normally, if it's a parent, they'll write, my kids. And I'd say, I'm hoping if you're still married, your husband or wife as well, can I put this down as family? And I say, right, show me your diary. And normally people don't use diaries anymore. They work with reminders. Get yourself a physical diary. Great starting point. And then you write in pen reasonable time that you're going to spend with your kids and your significant other. And that is a non-negotiable boundary. If you have booked to spend time with your kids or your significant other, and you allow something else to steal the time you've allocated. So in other words, you have a date night set with your husband, wife. You have an outing booked with your kids. And you get a phone call and it says, can you attend this meeting with this person at the same time? And so often, most people I know, when they start this process, will say, I will push my private commitments to one side for a business commitment. And I will say, then they're not really that important to you, are they? And people will justify it and they'll say, oh, yes, but they don't eat if I don't work. And I'm going to say that every time you allow that boundary to be crossed, it will be crossed again. And at some point, you need to stand for something. And if you stand for your family and you say that kids, wife, whatever, husband, are the most important thing in my life, then treat them that way. And treat yourself that way, because every time you move your wife to one side for a business meeting, you move your kids to one side for a conference call, you are building up the guilt arsenal. So you want to know where that guilt comes in? This is the start of it. And guilt on your side becomes resentment on their side, and you're now looking at a marriage that is eventually going to fall apart, or a relationship with your kids that's going to fall apart. It doesn't fall apart in one bang. It falls apart in little pieces, piece by piece. We'll often say, how do you eat an elephant if you're trying to achieve a task? You eat it bite by bite. That's how something falls apart. In our business consultancy, businesses fail one mistake at a time. It's not normally a one big blob, boom, and it's gone. It is the sum of a number of little errors that eventually causes the decline. And we can look at a business and we pick up problems now and we'll say, you've got another 6 months before your sales start dropping. Or you might have another year and then you're going to have a reversal in this trend. And people will turn around and say, oh, we've done this like this for the last 30 years. You can't tell us we're going to fail. And we say, look at Blockbusters. Remember what happened to them? It's the same in your personal life. When we talk about setting boundaries, decide what's important. You have to have priorities. And I use plural here, unfortunately, because it shouldn't be. What is important to you? What is your value system? What do you intend to get out of an engagement? We teach, Mariette, as well, that you should never have a meeting without an objective. Before we have a chat, when we chatted with you, we had already had our discussions. We knew what we wanted. We knew what we could offer. And we said, yes, there is synergy here. We are not just having a conversation for the sake of having a conversation. There is value for both parties involved here. Boundaries mean you know what those values are and you defend them. And my challenge is a simple one for anyone reading the book, listening to this, is go and just ask the question, who is the most important person or the most important thing in my life? And I challenge you to not cancel an appointment with that thing or that person in favor of anything for a limited period. A month. Most people won't make it a month. They will cancel. And then they'll say, yeah, but I have to do this for my job. No, you don't. You really don't. As a young man, it's one lesson that I learned very early on. I said no to certain things very early on. In the initial negotiations with employers, you know what it did? It made me more valuable. Because I wasn't a pushover. I wouldn't just accept the terms. I would look at my employment contract and I'd say, this looks great. Salary's good. Fantastic. Package great. Okay. You say occasional weekends. No, sorry, non-negotiable. I will choose when I'm going to take a weekend. If I'm going to work on a weekend, it's my choice, not yours. You can't delegate. Oh, no, but that's company policy. Well, then you don't get me. So I've never had a contract where I've had to work for weekends. It's always come out because my weekends are my discretionary time. If I decide to work, that's on me as a young person, but people are too scared to do it. Know what's valuable to you as a person. That's how you set boundaries. How do you say no without guilt? Don't develop the guilt. Understand that you have value. In an employment situation, this is where most people struggle. They sign their employment contract and it's like a slave contract. It is felt that the employer owns you between 9 and 5. No, think of it differently. When you are employed, you are selling your skills to another party. It's contract law. We've put it under labor law to protect workers and protect employers. I do not believe in employment contracts. I don't have them. We have service contracts. If you work with us, you will be a service provider, which means you invoice us and you enjoy all the wonderful tax benefits of being a business owner because the tax code is written for business owners, not for employees. And you get to dictate your terms. You get to say, these are the terms upon which I will supply my skills to you. Go into any contract negotiation with your employers the same way, because that's where the boundaries are crossed the most easily. So don't let it. Become the deal maker, not the deal taker. one of the things we like to teach as well, be the one that puts the deal on the table. Don't wait for the deal to be given to you and you've just got to say yes or no. Negotiate. You had a little experience of that on Friday, didn't you, Maria?
I did, yeah.
And it was easy. It's actually easy to do a deal. It's much easier than people think, but it starts with a single step. And that step is understand what your values are, and your boundaries are there to protect those values. And if you protect the values that you stand on, you will say no without guilt.
Thank you, Michael.
Answer the question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. I do like the fact that you spoke about clarity, because I think one thing that speaking to you but also working with your book offers is clarity. And I would just like to mention here, you spoke of the people who said they didn't have time to read a book. I was very happy to see that your book is simply written, not stupidly written, simply written, so it reads with clarity and that it doesn't take a long time to read. So I think for someone writing about respecting time, that shows that they walk their talk.
Maria, I appreciate that. And it is one of the important things to me was that you could read this book in an afternoon. It's there to create time for people, not take time away. Absolutely. It has to add value, and it needs to add value in as short a space of time as possible.
Yes. Where can listeners get hold of your book, Michael?
It's available on Amazon. There is also a link to the Amazon site on our website. So should I give our website address now? I'm sure you'll put it in.
Yes, please.
So it's www.thejourneytohere.co.za. So www.thejourneytohere.co.za. And we did chat briefly earlier on, and there's some exciting news in that by the time this episode goes live, there should be an Afrikaans version of the book available as well. So that will be updated on our website. The book on Amazon is Take Back Time by Michael P. Glenister, A Guide to Rethinking Your Relationship with Time.
Yes, two things. Firstly, I will attach the link to your website and the link to the book on Amazon. I will attach that to the podcast. And also there will be more information in the podcast notes, plus the covers. I hope when it goes live that I will have both the English and the Afrikaans cover. And then the other thing, Danita played quite a role in your book, in getting it all together. Could you just say what she did?
I think the list of what she didn't do is way shorter, Mariette. I think other than being the muse and the inspiration for the book, the journey that we've walked is the inspiration ultimately for writing this book. So Danita is essentially on every page. Technically, she edited the book for me, checked grammar, checked punctuation, did the typesetting, did the learning curve to get it self-published. So, and she manages all of the back office stuff on this side. It's not what did she do. It really, she's an integral part of the entire process and part of the journey to here. And obviously, the journey to here is also a podcast. So if one wanted to hear more about Danita and our journey together, with a lot of life chats and perambulations, you can go and listen to The Journey to Here on the various podcast platforms as well.
Yes, and if you're looking for that, you can go to your website. Okay, let me rephrase. If one wants to listen to it, one can go to your website and just scroll down on the homepage and you will get to the link to the podcast. Yeah, and I'll also put that in the podcast notes.
Thank you.
Before I let you go, may I ask you a silly fun question?
Yes, so I must say that I've kind of been dreading this and wondering where you're going to go with this one, but yes, fire away.
You're going to get off lightly today. If you were a farmyard animal, Michael, what would you be?
A four-slice toaster.
What?
A four-slice toaster.
Animal?
Yes, yes. It gets plugged in and toasts bread and goes really well with eggs, bacon, and fried onions.
That's the first time someone played that trick on me.
This is a game that is often played here. It normally happens late at night. Anita will say, if you were a sea creature, what would you be? And I said, don't answer the question directly because then I have to justify it.
Yeah. So. I think you're setting a bad example for future guests. I'm going to have trouble from now on.
Mariette, thank you. This has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. And if I had to choose to be a farmyard animal, I would probably be our rooster. We have the most awesome rooster out here, and I hope that I could be as awesome as he is.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Thank you so much for this discussion, and thank you for writing the book. You know, I would think that a book on time would be all tips and tricks and, you know, telling one what to do. And this is not it at all. It is a book of self-exploration. And I'm very grateful that I came across it and across you and Anita. So thank you very much.
The pleasure is all ours.
And to our listeners, it was good of you to join us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast series. And if you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series, Calm, Clear, and Helpful, is produced by me with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.